Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C. Citizens in Equatorial Guinea go to the polls to choose a new president in a general election Sunday.
Elections should go as usual. There will be military at every voting stations in Bata and Malabo. Those are the two capital cities.
The Chief Justice of Uganda expresses concern about the shortage of judges and magistrates.
There is shortage of judicial officers, but from a rule of law perspective, that is not the problem that Uganda is facing in terms of adjudication of disputes.
And a Nigerian civil society group petitions President Muhammadu Buhari to demand an investigation into the masterminds of attacks on the offices of the Independent Electoral Commission, or INEC.
Serap's call, the letter to the president, is predicated on the growing attacks on INEC facilities and offices in Nigeria.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Citizens in Equatorial Guinea go to the polls to choose a new president in a general election on Sunday. Incumbent president and longtime leader Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbazogu seeks another term to extend his 43-year rule in the oil-rich country located on the west coast of Central Africa. Legislative and local elections will also be held on Sunday. Supporters of the ruling Democratic Party of Equatorial Guinea, or PDGE, say the president will win re-election with an overwhelming majority. This, they say, is due to the development project the government has undertaken over the years, but critics say the elections will not be a true reflection of the will of the people. They say elections in the country are often rife with intimidation, harassment, and arrest of opposition leaders seen as a political threat to the government. For analysis about Sunday's elections, I read Tutu Alicante, the executive director of the non-governmental organization called Equatorial Guinea Justice.
This is not an effort, an altruistic effort by Obiang to stay in power. It's just an economic calculation for Obiang. And as long as Equatorial Guinea remains profitable to him and to his family, he is going to do anything to stay in power. So elections should go as usual. There will be military at every voting stations in Bata and Malabo. Those are the two capital cities. So that anyone that goes to vote, seeing the military, would know exactly what paper they have to pick before they go into the booth to deposit that paper, right? So Obiang in the end will win with 90%+ of the vote as usual.
Supporters of the ruling party are of the view that as long as opposition political parties are presenting candidates who are participating in the election, it legitimizes the election. What's your take?
Legitimizing elections are about setting up institutions that can validate those elections. It's about having a judiciary that is functioning, having a legislative systems that work, having civil society as an important part of the makeup of that society, the fabric of that society, a society in which you do not have civil society, you do not have independent media, you do not have ways for citizens to voice their opinions, their views freely, whether anything is legitimate or not, you know, does not depend on anyone but the government that is undermining that system. And that's the reality in Equatorial Guinea. Elections cannot be legitimate, not because of what CPDS or any opposition does or does not do, but rather because of the kleptocratic, the highly authoritarian, the autocratic government that we have had in place for the last 43 years. And that is not something that the opposition can change overnight. This is something that those in power have the levers, have the power, have the ability to change. However, when it's not in the best interest, they're not going to change it, you know, and that's why elections remain, in my opinion, and the opinion of most observers, illegitimate in Equatorial Guinea.
Well, Tutu, what do you say to critics of opposition groups and civil society groups like yours who say that you are being unpatriotic by always washing the country's dirty linen in public?
We have to be honest with ourselves. There's nothing more important to me than seeing Africa in a good light. However, when the reality I have is one in which the same person has been in power now since 1979. Think about how many presidents you've had in the US since. Anyone that loves democracy, anyone that loves human dignity, thinks that someone that has held on to power for 43 years, someone who has named his family members in all key positions in government, am I being unpatriotic by saying that we have one of the most autocratic regimes in Africa and in the world? I don't think so.
Critics of the administration have said that there appears to be intimidation and harassment leading up to Sunday's election. However, supporters of the government are saying nothing of that has happened and that people are free to choose the next leader, and they are confident that the incumbent president will win re-election. Your take?
I am confident that the incumbent president will win re-election, and I don't have to be a supporter of the president to know that. I just have to be an observer that, you know, that Obiang is not going to leave power. It's not in Obiang's interest to leave power. Obiang knows that the minute he leaves power, the minute he will face prosecution internally and outside Equatorial Guinea.
Tutu Alicante is the executive director of the non-governmental organization called Equatorial Guinea Justice. He spoke with me from Brussels, Belgium. The Chief Justice of Uganda, Alphonse Owiny-Dolo, is expressing concern about the shortage of judges and magistrates in the East African country. At an induction ceremony of judges in the capital, Kampala, the Chief Justice remarked that the country needs more than 2,000 magistrates and at least 150 judges to help resolve a backlog of cases in the court. He also called on corrupt and lazy judicial officers to quit if they are unwilling to perform their duties in the prevailing environment. But critics say it appears judicial officers are not independent and are failing to inspire confidence in Ugandans. For reaction to the judiciary and concerns over a shortage of magistrates and judges, I reached Gawaya Tegule. He is a prominent human rights lawyer and a prolific legal writer.
Well, it is true there is shortage of judicial officers, but from a rule of law perspective, that is not the problem that Uganda is facing in terms of adjudication of disputes. I think our biggest problem is that the people who are being invited to the bench are not of the caliber that befits judicial officers, at least most of them.
Why do you say so?
Most of the appointments are designed to get the judiciary to do what the ruling party wants.
The Chief Justice warned what he called lazy and corrupt judicial officers to quit if they are not willing to perform their duties in the existing environment. What is your take on his statement?
It is true there is a bit of that laziness. I think there is a bit of corruption. That is true. But like we said, the bigger concern for us as lawyers is that there are structural issues with the judiciary. What he's talking about is really the smaller concern. And we know that once we sort out the structural issues, that can be taken care of. But the bigger issue that I'm looking at here is purely structural.
Gawaya, some supporters of the government and the ruling party, the NRM, are of the opinion that judicial officers have been impartial and have interpreted the constitution as it is now, and that if there's any concern by lawyers, then perhaps they should seek for the amendment of the constitution as you have it now in order to meet some of your demands that you're making. How do you respond to that?
If you put the question to the judges themselves, off the record, they will tell you exactly what I'm telling you.
Where does the judiciary service of Uganda go from here in order for people to feel confident that when they go to court, their cases will be heard fairly
All we need is a new government, a government that understands the needs and aspirations of Ugandans.
Gawaya Tegule is a prominent human rights lawyer and a prolific legal writer. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In Nigeria, a civil society group is petitioning President Muhammadu Buhari to urgently direct the Attorney General and all security agencies to investigate and apprehend the mastermind of attacks on the offices of the Independent Electoral Commission, or INEC. The Socioeconomic Rights and Accountability Project, or SERAP, says a surge in attacks on the offices of the Electoral Management Organization appears to seek to undermine efforts to administer credible polls in the upcoming general election in February. SERAP says the apprehension and punishment of those responsible for the attacks will serve as a deterrent. The petition comes as Nigerians express concern about the security situation in parts of the country. Some analysts say if not adequately addressed, the security challenge could prevent some citizens from voting. Nigerians go to the polls next year to choose a new president, Senate, House of Representatives, and local representatives. Kolawole Oluwadare is the deputy director of SERAP. He tells me that the perpetrators of the attacks on the offices of INEC must be identified and prosecuted with the full force of the law.
The letter to the president is predicated on the ongoing attacks on INEC facilities and offices in Nigeria. And you would understand that this is the build-up to the 2023 general elections, which is just a couple of months. And this affects the capacity and the capability of INEC to conduct the elections. So this doesn't only mean that required documents and very important things that INEC needs to be able to hold elections, they have been destroyed. This is a waste. It also affects voter confidence to be able to vote and to be able to participate freely in the elections in 2023.
Some people suggest that perhaps they are suspicious of the fact that INEC has not been fair in organizing previous elections, so people are displeased, and that is why the attack is happening. What do you make of such a thought?
While the motive of the individuals or groups that are preparing the attack may be hard to decipher now, or will possibly be arrested, cannot in any way be inferred that this is because of anything INEC has done or failed to do. At best, from the keen watchers of events in Nigeria, these may mean people who may not necessarily want the elections to hold. But definitely, it cannot be the blame cannot be put on INEC in this instance. These facilities being bound contains materials, sensitive materials that are used for the elections. Nothing on ground, either precedent or even contextual facts as it is, suggest that the attack is based on INEC's perceived inability to perceived unfairness. But
Kola, what do you say to those who are of the view that the Nigerian government should have sent security to protect the officials of INEC as well as offices of INEC to prevent such from happening?
Yes, the state should, which is why we've written this letter to the president. He should be able to provide not only assurances to INEC, but also match this with action to ensure that law enforcement agencies are proactive in preventing the attacks in the first place.
It's SERAP's opinion that if these perpetrators or those behind these attacks are not apprehended and punished in accordance with the law, the integrity of the elections could be compromised?
Of course. And it would mean that has to be viewed contextually. If, for instance, the violence escalates and it affects a substantial part of Nigeria, and it means that votes from those areas would not be able to be effectively part of the total vote tally that would determine various offices in Nigeria. So naturally, polling units are situated all across Nigeria. For each loss of polling units or each loss of INEC material, it affects the overall elections.
Kolawole Oluwadare is the deputy director of SERAP. He spoke with me from the Nigerian commercial capital, Lagos. Karuta Stete, a visually impaired lawyer, has been invited to join the Ghanaian bar at a recent ceremony in the capital, Accra. Tete, who lost his vision at 11 years old, says being called to the bar is a fulfillment of his long-held dream of becoming a lawyer. His invitation has been welcomed by a cross-section of Ghanaians since he was the only visually impaired person among the 700 lawyers who were asked to join the new law association. The Ghanaian Chief Justice presented a certificate to Tete, who received a standing ovation at the ceremony. Analysts say Tete's achievement is a significant boost to persons with disabilities in Ghana and beyond. To learn more about his call to the Ghanaian bar and his future prospects, I reached Caruthers Tete.
My motivation for pursuing law as a profession is I want to be independent and to be able to contribute positively to my society, and again, to be able to serve as the voice of the voiceless. I heard stories of people whose rights have been abused. And anytime I heard of such stories, I was inspired to be in a position where I can really serve as the voice of the voiceless.
What do you think your achievement means to people living with disabilities?
It just tells the story that if you have a dream, it doesn't matter your circumstances. If you work harder, you'll be able to achieve that dream. It just tells the story that disability can never be in an inability. I have lost my sight, but my brains are still working. Other abilities are functioning. So the fact that you have lost an ability doesn't mean you are useless in the society. You can explore other abilities just as I have done.
How has been the reaction of the general Ghanaian public?
People are inspired that, one, persons with disabilities can also make great achievements in the society. People have erased some perceptions that persons with disabilities cannot do anything, especially in our parts of the world. People have come to realization that when we give persons with disabilities the needed support, when we create the enabling environment, they will be able to achieve their goals. And I will tell you that on that day when my name was mentioned, I had a standing ovation. The Chief Justice of Ghana came down to present the certificate into my hands. And it really meant a lot for me. And as I said earlier, the Ghanaian populace.
Do you have any plans of engaging other people with disabilities as a part of a program or effort by you to encourage them to follow your lead?
It's one of my dreams to be in a position where I can contribute positively. So I look forward to partnering with any institution or an NGO that is ready to partner with me, where we can move to senior high schools which have persons with disabilities. We can go there to encourage them.
What's next for you?
I'm looking forward to securing a scholarship to pursue my academics and PhD. I currently am a candidate of an LLM degree program in alternative dispute resolution at the University of Ghana, where, by the grace of God, I'll be graduating in January.
Caruthers Tete, a visually impaired lawyer, has been invited to join the Ghanaian bar. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
In Malawi, President Lazarus Chakwera has officially launched the Flag Week of the Council for the Handicapped, or MACOHA, for this year. The theme of the occasion was vocational skills acquisition, means for improving the livelihoods of persons with disabilities. Delivering remarks at the ceremony, the president called for unity among Malawians. He said skills acquisition will enable persons with disabilities to create jobs for themselves and employ many others, and will encourage self-reliance and wealth creation. People living with disabilities have called on the government to implement more empowerment measures to help improve their living conditions. For more on what the president and his government plans to do for persons with disabilities, I reach Anthony Kasunda. He is the Malawian presidential press secretary.
In his own words, the president is taking this seriously because it aligns very well with the Maui 2063, which as a country, we are aspiring to use human capital development as an enabling vehicle towards the creation of jobs. This is to give all citizens the opportunity to be Bryant. And the president is emphasizing the point that he does not want to leave anybody behind, including persons with disabilities.
Well, the president talked about the fact that lip services should not be paid to people living with disabilities. So my question to you is, what specific measures will his government implement or is implementing to help, give the acquired skill or provide the opportunities for people living with disabilities in order to improve their lives, as he himself has said?
The government of Malawi is supporting all initiatives that organizations that are looking after the welfare of persons with disabilities are implementing. Today, MAKOHA is an organization where just thanking the president for the support that the government has given to them to revamp the factory. This is a factory that has been there for a long time. It trains people, persons with disabilities, into various skills, training them with equipment. So the government is doing everything to make sure that the persons with disabilities are not left behind. But most important fact is that the approach of the current government is to put policies that promote principles of human dignity and not human charity, which is in line with the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. The president was very clear that we should not look at persons with disabilities as those that are looking for handouts or charities from us, but we should work together.
The president said he is committed to ensuring that government brings Malawians together to join forces in the course of building a new Malawi for themselves and their children, even children with disabilities. What does he mean by that, and what pragmatic measures is it putting in place to actualize this commitment?
I think the president has time and again said that long time, I think we have just been talking, but he's saying, let us put now the talk into action. Talk about inclusive programs. Let us make sure that we create a conducive environment for the participation of persons with disabilities. If we talk about inclusive society, let us put infrastructure that includes persons with disabilities. He lamented that there are a bit of buildings that still cannot be accessed by persons with wheelchairs. So when he talks about building a new Malawi, he's talking about a Malawi that nobody will feel left out in anything. So he's saying when implementing projects or programs or any policy, we should always look at inclusivity, making sure that even those that persons with disabilities are not left out or are not disadvantaged.
So as the Mark Flag Week, what should people living with disabilities expect from the Malawian government, and what changes should they expect from the Malawian society moving forward?
What persons with disabilities should expect, especially from the message from the president, is that one, change of perception when you look at people with disabilities. Don't look at them as people that are looking for handouts. But also, the president has made an special appeal for people to generously give during this week. We have been told by MAKOHA that the funds that will be raised this week will go towards 60 in one of the areas to buy them equipment. They've been trained in various vocational skills, and this money will be used to buy them equipment as their startup capital as they go to live independent life. So persons with disabilities should expect that change of attitude towards them, and also they should expect a lot of support from Malawians.
Anthony Kasunda is the Malawian Presidential Press Secretary. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. In Zambia, a former foreign minister and presidential candidate has announced the formation of a new political party known as Citizens First. Harry Kalaba says he plans to launch the new opposition party next year. Kalaba, who was the presidential candidate of the opposition Democratic Party in the last general election, quit the group, citing differences with some of the leaders. He says the new party seeks to put Zambians first in all of its policies.
Analysts say a unified opposition could play a critical role in the country's burgeoning democracy to serve as a check and balance on the government. For more on the formation of the new party and its prospects, I reach Harry Kalabar in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
This is a party which has been born out of the need for Zambians to begin putting their interests at the center stage. 58 years after independence, we, the citizens of this country, have continued to struggle financially or economically because the policies which we have don't really favor the locals.
What is the motivation behind the formation of this particular political party known as Citizens First? Because there are a plethora of opposition political parties in Zambia.
Citizens First is very unique in the sense that it is putting citizens at the epicenter of their endeavors. Yes, there can be a number of political parties around, but the philosophy, the enthusiasm which Citizens First is bringing to the arena is totally different and unique. And therefore, there could have been no better time for Citizens First to be born than this time. But also secondly, Citizens First becomes a platform for us to stand and propagate our ideas, even as we work with other opposition political parties in a quest to strengthen ourselves for 2026. It is a platform which we will use. It is a platform which will strengthen, but it can work for the good of the Zambian people.
But Harry Kalabar, some supporters of the ruling party coalition are of the view that their party is people-centered and it puts Zambians first. You are claiming your party puts Zambians first, or the people's or citizens first. The ruling party and its allies are also saying the same thing. So who convinces Zambians that they put them first? Because both of you are claiming the same thing.
The Zambians know for themselves who is putting them first and who is not. The Zambians know that the ruling party, the UPND, has given tax holidays to foreign Spain. The Zambians know that the ruling party has put a high premium on foreign entrepreneurs as compared to the Zambian entrepreneurs. We see it in the awarding of contracts. We see it in the manner in which our leaders of today are pushing their agenda with the foreign interest, as opposed to local people. So the Zambian people know that obviously to talk is easy, but to do is very difficult. And for us, Citizens First, we are not only talking the talk, we are walking the talk.
What do you say to critics who are saying that this is yet another one-man show and that the party is for you to use as a vehicle for your personal ambition to become the president of Zambia? So you will leave all other political parties that are there instead of trying to join one to form your own party. So you'll be at the helm of affairs of the party until you realize your dream of becoming the next president of Zambia. How do you respond to such criticisms?
First of all, I love to talk because that can only be a figment of an imagination. It's not a question of becoming president. It's a question of contributing to the economic growth of our country. And Citizens First is born out of a struggle. It is born because we want to show everybody that, yes, we can put Zambians at the epicenter of our interests. Those who are saying we are using it because we want to push our own personal agendas, they need to go back and understand the kind of person Harry Kalabar is. I have never sought public office for personal aggrandizement. I have never sought public office to just push my interests. Some of us have learned to push public office or seek public office so that Zambians can benefit from their wealth, so that Zambians can have a voice. Our people require a voice, especially at a time such as this, where we are seeing that everything in this country, everything is becoming difficult. And Zambians require somebody who can speak for them. And the platform of Citizens First is just the correct platform for Harry Kalabar to use. If it was about being the president, I would have been in any other political party and I would have pursued that cause of being president. Remember, I resigned from government at a time when my prospects of even becoming a leader of that political party were very high. But I resigned on principle. So what drives me is principle and nothing else.
Harry Kalabar is the leader of the newly formed opposition party Citizens First. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. And coming up, The World Cup kicks off tomorrow, Sunday, for an in-depth look at the coming action. Here's In Goal with Sonny Young and Mokbeal.
Cup greetings to all our Voice of America listeners and viewers. You're On Goal with Sonny and Mokbeal. I'm Sonny Young. I'm joined by Mokbeal Yarborough. Mokbeal, World Cup fever in Qatar.
Sporty World Cup greetings to you too, Sonny. Super, super exciting. We have so much exciting information that we're willing to give our viewership. Talk to me, Sonny.
Well, if our viewership might be tuning in now and doesn't have access to video, Mokbeal is wearing kind of an Argentina-like jersey, blue and white, but there is another country on the front. It's not Argentina. Tell us about it, Mokbeal.
It is not. It is Somalia. So I am here representing as a Somali-American, and I really like the colors of this jersey right here. So hopefully in the near future, we might see Somalia in the World Cup.
How would you describe football development in Somalia, Mokbeal?
I think it's getting a lot better. The under-17 team recently just qualified for AFCON 2023. They went undefeated in the Central and East Africa Cup. So I'm super excited to see what they have in store. They're developing the kids really well over there. So, yeah, best of luck to Somalia, man.
How about my jersey, Mokbeal?
South Africa.
This goes back to 2010 when South Africa hosted the World Cup. And I want to give a shout out for one of our late sportsmen in Africa, Marco Uma, who used to host our Daybreak Africa radio show, the sports segment on Daybreak Africa. Mark gifted me this jersey. So
amazing.
I'll remember him. And we have to remember Sadio Mane, Mokbeal. Big story ahead of this Qatar 2022. Your reaction to Mane being ruled out of the World Cup?
Honestly, Sonny, I feel like it's the most devastating blow to not only Senegal, but to the continent at large. He was and still is the most dominant football player in Africa as of late. Right, you could make the argument and say Mohamed Salah as well has had a run as well as a former teammate of his in Liverpool, but Sadio Mane's last year's run has been really like amazing. You know, everything that he's done for his transition to the Bundesliga, where he plays for Bayern Munich, where he got injured unfortunately in a game recently. But for him to be the most capped player for Senegal and their lead scorer, and then to have to now unfortunately, you know, watch his team from the sidelines, it leaves a huge gap for that Senegalese side.
I did hear a comment from his former Liverpool teammate, Virgil van Dijk, who we will see in the World Cup for the Netherlands. He said, whenever you miss a top player, wherever they're from, it's a loss for the sport of football.
It really is, because when you're a competitor at that level, you don't want to get away with an easy win. You never want to play against a team that doesn't have their go-to star and beat them. It feels like it's almost that team is at a disadvantage in essence. But this could be a really, really huge moment for the Senegalese side to really dig deep and almost play this World Cup for their guy, Sadio Mane, and really show that they have what it takes to be able to get beyond that initial group stages even without their star player.
Mokbeal, on the line, we have our friend Sunday Shomari in Doha. Sporty World Cup greetings, Sunday.
Sporty World Cup greetings, Sonny and Mokbeal, all the way from Doha, Qatar. We are ready to rock this nation and enjoy World Cup.
Sunday, together, we are ready to experience the magic of football. I love that promo, Sunday. I love it. What's the atmosphere like in Doha, Sunday?
I'm telling you, Sonny, I wish you were here, my brother. It is Magic. The day we arrived here right away from the airport, we saw a lot of fans coming from Mexico. You know Mexico?
Mexico.
Yes, sir. We met big fans wearing big jerseys and big caps. You know those big hats from Mexico? They're flying in the country. Everybody is ready for the World Cup. Even the promos in the airplane. You have all these bullets with World Cup pictures, covered with World Cup stories. Everything is World Cup, World Cup, World Cup. And also, Sonny, they are very well prepared because security is of the highest. Everywhere there's security, people are happy. People sure are enjoying. And you know what? At 1 a.m., the first day I got here, I went to try to talk to people. 1 a.m., there were young ladies, old ladies, children in the Bay Area and the market, Souq Waqif, you know the market.
Right,
and people
right.
Enjoying their meal and chanting. All these guys from Tunisia, from Algeria, from Nigeria, it didn't matter. Although Qatar is the one playing, but the neighboring countries, all of them are supporting and coming in to cheer for them.
Absolutely, Sonny. That was going to be my next follow-up question Sunday. I wanted to follow up with what is the feeling like, not only the atmosphere there, but how is it that the African fans are reacting and how many African fans do you see around?
I tell you, if I have a calculator, I can count, but I can't even. I was moving around with Kali, going all these places, and there are so many fans. But I can give you a figure that somebody gave me.
Okay.
I had a chance to interview a couple from Tunisia, and we were wondering how many Tunisians are in this country. And she said, we are almost 40,000 fans cheering for Tunisia. And these people traveled to come here. I was like, wow, this is just one country. Mm. What about... There are so many people out here, and I think some other fans, as they say, they'll be flying in from Dubai from the day of the game and go back after that game. So not all of these fans are going to be staying here. Some of them are just coming in for the game and going out.
Wow.
But it's a lot of fans that are already in this country, my friend.
Sunday, this has been described as the most compact World Cup in history. All 8 World Cup stadiums are within 50 kilometers of the capital, Doha. So as a result, the teams are basically staying in place. They don't really have to travel much. Your thoughts on this compact World Cup?
This is very interesting. And not only the compact, you also have the metro line. The metro line that goes all around in those all 8 stadiums in and around the city. And this, for people with the higher card, which is literally the visa that you have to use coming into the country, you can go on those trains and those metro for free and move around from stadium to stadium, from areas and places to places. So I think this is a unique situation because we were used to see other World Cups, like in Brazil, some people in Rio de Janeiro, some people in Sao Paulo, and you travel. But this is a small, compact area, as you say. So I think for them, security-wise, they have to be very careful. And that's why I think they're really doing a very good job as far as security is concerned. And I also think it's good maybe for the fans who are here that if you want to go and enjoy some specific team, you don't have to worry about spending so much money or to go so far so that you can see these stadiums and these places. So I think it's a really unique and different situation.
Sunday, definitely. That's exciting. But I have to ask Sonny for a quick question. How do you feel that Sunday is over there and we're over here right now? We don't get to enjoy, you know, should the roles be reversed? Should we be on Skype talking? How do you feel? And have you ever been to the Middle East?
I have not. I have not been to the Middle East. So I'll throw that question to Sunday. Sunday, have you traveled at all in the Middle East before?
Well, Sonny, I'll tell you, I have traveled a little bit. I remember about 15 years ago, I just like on a transit here in Qatar. And after that, not much, but of course the feel is that you get is like when I went to Egypt in Africa, but it's very close to Middle East. That will be the closest experience that I had, and I see right here, right now.
All right.
Man, awesome, awesome. Thank you so much, Sunday Shomari from Doha, Qatar. We will definitely be checking back in with you in a couple of days. Enjoy your stay, and let that World Cup fever go through you.
Thank you. I'm ready for it.
Awesome, awesome.
And Mukbil, traveling with Sunday Shomari in Doha is Kali Abdu, and we hope to have Kali on our podcast down the road, perhaps next week. But Kali, excellent videographer and reporter for that matter.
Multi-skilled. So definitely we'll be excited to have him and have his insights as to what he sees, especially when it comes to the following week. As we know, the following week will be the start of the matches and the games.
Mukbil, hold on. Kali on the line from Doha right now. Kali Abdu. Kali, how are you doing?
Sporty greetings, my brother. I'm doing
good to see you, Kali. How are things in Doha?
Amazing. Like Sunday was mentioning, it's a lot of fans. One of the things that we've been very amazed to see is the amount of Africans. We've seen a lot of Kenyans. There's a lot of Kenyans who are working at the World Cup, and just a lot of Africans live here. You know, they've been here for years, and they're here supporting all African countries. It's a beautiful thing.
Kali, do you think that there are some African fans that are there that might not have their teams playing in the World Cup, but they have this level of affinity towards the other African teams? Do you sense that kind of African culture in essence over there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're just coming from the Fan Festival, and we interviewed some Africans, and I tell you, man, the energy they had for the African countries was amazing. It was a sight to see. You know, they were cheering on all the African countries. They were chanting Tunis, they're chanting Morocco, chanting Ghana, yeah. You know, supporting Senegal, singing Sadio Mane songs. It was beautiful. They were there for Ghana, Cameroon. They were there for all the countries, you know. So even though they were from Guinea-Bissau, but they're supporting every African country. And they firmly believe that the World Cup is coming to Africa this year.
That's amazing. Beautiful.
Kali, what's your reaction to Sadio Mane missing the World Cup? I know that's been one of the big trending African stories.
You know, when we left the Fan Festival, there was a huge mural of Sadio Mane on one of the buildings, like really big. And, you know, when we were leaving, I felt the void that Sadio Mane is leaving in this World Cup. And so many fans, some Bangladeshi fans, are huge Sadio Mane supporters. They love Liverpool because of Sadio Mane, so they feel sad that Sadio Mane won't be at this World Cup. So he will be missed. I really feel for the whole of Africa that he won't be participating. But there are other African players here, and we need to show them some respect as well. And even though Sadio won't be playing, there's a lot of great players that will be playing. So we're here to cheer them on.
Absolutely. No, I really love that point. World Cups are where stars are made in essence. So there's a lot of players that might not be as well known as Sadio Mane, but I guarantee you after this World Cup, a lot of them will become household names. You'll be shocked. Shockers, you know, can happen. If you were to say, Kali, of the five African teams, who do you feel like has the best chances of coming out of the group stages?
I mean, me personally,
yeah,
I think you can't underestimate Ghana. You can't underestimate Senegal. You can't underestimate Cameroon, because they've kind of shown they've shown some substance, and they've shown that they have a lot of quality, you know, in their teams, and they have a lot of experience. Cameroon did well in the African Cup of Nations. Senegal, we already know their pedigree, but Ghana just beat Switzerland, you know, and even though it was a friendly, but they're showing that, hey, you know, we're coming here to really demonstrate that we're a good team. So I think, you know, I have to say Senegal on paper for me are the team to beat from the African teams. But at the same time, you know, Morocco may surprise people, you know, or Tunisia may surprise people. So I was telling Sunday that I think this World Cup may surprise some people. You know, some players may be here to prove a point. So, you know, but again, to answer your question, you can't go wrong if you're predicting Senegal.
The VOA's Kali Abdou speaking with us from Doha, Qatar. Thank you, Kali. You're on goal with Sonny and Mukbil. Sonny Young joined by Mukbil Yabaro here in Studio 2. We'll be right back after this break.
It is the biggest sports event of the year, the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Join VOA to celebrate Africa's king sport. In-depth coverage, pre- and post-game analysis, breakout stars, Cinderella teams, coaches, players, and let's not forget the fans from the four corners of the continent and from the city of Doha. We'll be there throughout the competition. Don't miss the fun with Team VOA Africa. Let's experience the magic of football together.
Let's experience the magic of On Goal with Sonny and Mukbil. Sonny Young joined by Mukbil Yabaro here in Studio 2. Sounds like Kali and Sunday Shamari have adjusted well to Doha, Mukbil.
That's putting it easy. They look very comfortable. They look like they've had some good rest, and they are ready for the excitement of the tournament to start. And once that starts rolling, I can guarantee you next week they will not have that level of calm.
Well, I did hear Sunday say, actually it was Kali, that you know, more than, there are the other African players in Qatar who can definitely make an impact outside of Sadio Mane. Why don't you pick out one? I know there's a young player from Ghana who has caught your attention.
Mohamed Kudus is a rising star for Ghana. I'm super excited to see what he does. This young man is playing for Ajax on his club team and has shown his scoring pedigree is unlike anything we've seen in a while. And the interesting thing about what we were saying earlier about Sadio Mane and how much it's going to hurt not only the Senegalese team, but the entirety of the continent. But this is one of the first World Cups where we have super high quality players, right, that don't necessarily play for your local teams, that have played at the highest levels of clubs in Europe and across the world, and they're playing for their home countries. And I feel like that is really going to change the trajectory of these African teams moving forward. So Mohamed Kudus, 22 years old, amazing, amazing score.
I love to say kudos for Kudus. Kudos for Kudus.
I like that.
But Kali also mentioned how the Black Stars beat Switzerland on Thursday in a friendly match by a score of 2-0. How much weight do you give a friendly result like that, Mukbil, ahead of the World Cup?
It's a tough call, Sonny. It's a tough call. The reason for that is, you know, there's so many different things that you have to put into place. When you have a friendly that close to the competition, are you really playing your main players? Like, what's the main reason for these friendlies happening so close to the tournament? It really, honestly, I personally don't understand it. Seeing that this tournament is in the middle of a club season, this is a very unique point. This is the first World Cup that has happened in this style or format, I should say, right? So to have friendlies then on top of all the play that these players have already played, it could just cause more injuries. And we've seen some players, unfortunately, that have gotten injured, even in trainings. So I seen the win. I like what it does maybe for the morale of the Black Stars, but to say that the Swiss were really playing their key guys or go-to guys, it could have almost been like a scouting match, right? To see really where this team is standing at. So,
and the Black Stars will kick off their World Cup campaign on November 24th against Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal. Ronaldo and Messi, two of the big superstars, and this could very well be their last World Cup, Muckbill. Messi, 35, I believe, and Ronaldo, 37 or 38. If Messi can somehow lift the World Cup, Muckbill, do you see that as cementing his legacy?
I think his legacy should be cemented as is, right? The difficult part about us fans looking outside, just looking from the outside in, is like we want that key player to win for the national side. To us, I feel like it's the most important one. Club teams, you can buy all these amazing players to play alongside you. You can't buy nationality, right? So to have Messi or Ronaldo be able to lift that World Cup for their team, I think puts them on another level. And I feel like Messi really has the better chance of the two, if I'm to say. He's still been playing really well for PSG. Ronaldo has been having his challenges and difficulty with his club side, Manchester United. Hasn't really played as much. So we'll see. But I think if Messi or Ronaldo were to win for their team, it would be huge. But I don't think they need it to solidify their place in, I guess, soccer football history.
Two other superstars who will be on the pitch in Qatar for the reigning World Cup champions, France, Karim Benzema, the 2022 Ballon d'Or winner, and Kylian Mbappe, who had a fairly spectacular World Cup debut 4 years ago in Russia. Mbappe saying that this could very well be his breakout World Cup, Muckbill. I mean, he had a terrific World Cup 4 years ago. But what about Benzema? What role do you see him playing for the French as they go for back-to-back World Cup titles?
I think Benzema has been playing the best football that he has been playing for some time now. And him being a little older and playing this great this late is really a testament to, you know, his perseverance. And during a time where some of his club, like his club Real Madrid at the time, wasn't too fond of him for a bit. Zidane came in there and kind of, you know, showcased almost like a big brother mentor type of role, right? Fun fact, they're both of Algerian descent as well.
Okay.
So I think he kind of, you know, took that big brother mentor role and really showed what Benzema is able to do. He really showed us this year that he is an amazing striker, and he could be that X factor for France. France are going to be missing key players due to injury, unfortunately, right?
Quick fun fact before we close this episode of On Goal with Sonny and Muckbill. Each team will be allowed 5 substitutions, Muckbill, compared with 3 substitutions at the 2018 World Cup. You think that will benefit teams having a couple extra players they can put in?
I believe it will. I think that not only helps the teams with how, you know, they can kind of almost load manage. As we can see with the club team still playing up until the tournament, a lot of these players might be fatigued, a little exhausted, legs are tired. So to be able to rotate 5 players on any given game is an amazing, amazing thing. So I'm really excited. And it also show us a lot of these younger players that might not have had the chances to play in these games, and we'll see what they'll be able to bring to us.
Muckbill Yabarrow, On Goal with Sonny and Muckbill. I want to thank our producer for episode 1 of On Goal with Sonny and Muckbill, Mike Hove. Thank you, Mike. Also give a shout out for the man working the boards, our studio technician, Peter Hundley. Thank you, Peter. And we do encourage our viewers and listeners to come back. Yes, come back for episode 2. We have lots more to talk about in terms of Qatar 2022, Muckbill.
We are definitely excited to come back to you after our very first episode. We cannot wait to give you the rundown of everything that is about to happen. And that is all from Washington, D.C., Mukbil Yabaro, and Sonny Young on goal.